Your weekend begins in Crystal Palate's Wine Country with sommelier Crystal Cameron Shad. Every week, Crystal takes your palate on a journey from the vineyard to the glass and opens your mind to the endless choices that await your next sip. Uncork your passion starting now on your trip through Wine Country on Seaville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Crystal Cameron Shad, and I hope you enjoy our trip through Virginia's beautiful wine country this morning. We're getting a taste of the old world right here in Virginia. My guest this week is Mathieu Finot, the very talented winemaker from King Family Vineyards, who brought a wealth of international winemaking experience to the Commonwealth when he arrived on the scene in 2003. Born in Crozes-Hermitage in the Rhone Valley of France, you could say wine was always in his blood. He has experience working in some of the premier wine destinations in the world, from Burgundy to Bordeaux to Provence. He even spent some time in Italy and South Africa before landing in Virginia more than a decade ago. Mathieu is in studio with us this morning. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming. I hear we were just talking before we went on air, and you used to do a little radio back in your student days.
It was a long time ago. That's when I was young.
Yeah, so you're an old pro at this.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, so you've been at King Family since 2007. You've been in Virginia a little more than a decade.
Yes.
You have such a wealth of experience. You've worked in some of the most sought after wine regions in the entire world. What is it about Charlottesville that's so special?
I don't know what's so special about Charlottesville, but I've been living here now since 2003. And it's been, in fact, now that the region that I know the most when it comes to winemaking and vineyard growing. I've been here for so long that that I'm very comfortable here now. What's so special? I mean, Charlottesville is quite unique, thanks to Thomas Jefferson and all the stories that goes behind. It's a very welcoming city, and I really like Charlottesville for that. So it's not only about the vineyard; it's also about the city or the town on its own.
So you were born in the Rhone Valley of France.
Yes.
And I actually took a Viking River cruise through southern France last fall and went through Châteauneuf du Pape, southern Rhone, northern Rhone, up through Beaune, and just what a beautiful, beautiful trip. When you were born there, do you remember, was your family involved in wine? Do you remember your first wine experience?
Yes. I mean, I'm coming from a farm. I'm coming from a farm. I was raised in a farm. My parents were not farmers, but my uncle and my grandfather and my grandmother were old farmers. So I always been around the vineyard, and it was a place where I'm from. We grow mainly apricots, pears, and vines. That's what we grow. And I've got a vineyard in Crozes-Hermitage. That's because of my mother. Always been involved with the winemaking since I'm very young. And on top of that, my father is always been a wine lover. So I've been, I had access very, very early on to very, very good wine. Mm-hmm. And at the end of high school, when I had to decide what I wanted to do in life, it felt for me at the time that getting into the wine business was a good way for me to enjoy a product that, to learn more about a product that I enjoy. And on top of that, to get back to my roots, my farmer's roots. So for me, it was a natural process to get back to that. There's an artistic sense in winemaking also that I found very interesting. So everything comes together and fit myself pretty well.
Winemaking is such a beautiful process, and so many people, I think, are not connected to what goes into their glass. I want to talk a little bit about that today and talk a little bit about Harvest 2016. And I've talked to some other winemakers in Virginia, and we've had a bit of a challenging vintage so far with a lot of, not for everybody, but we've certainly had spring frosts, right? A lot of rain this summer.
Yeah, but we're in Virginia. And Virginia is challenging. That's part probably one of the reasons why I'm still here. It's because of the challenge. Mm-hmm. When I arrived in 2003, I still think it's the worst vintage that I ever had in my life. It was raining the whole time. It was wet. We had a hurricane, in September. I mean, everything was like such a challenge.
Everything that could go wrong kind of went wrong that year.
Yeah. And that's the reason why I'm still here, because after 2003, I'm like, I'm going to stay another year. I was planning to go to New Zealand and never been to New Zealand, but I was not planning to stay here. But after 2003, I'm like, I'm going to stay another year because this place really challenged me, and I do like the challenge. So that's a part of the beauty of Virginia wine, is like every year will be different. And every year you will have to challenge yourself, your winemaking skill, your vineyard management skill, to get what you want in the bottle. So that's the interesting part.
Well, lucky for us, 2003 wasn't great for you because we still have you here.
Yes.
Yes, lucky for us. Well, speaking about those viticultural challenges, we hear a lot, obviously, about the hot, humid weather. It's every year there's some kind of challenge, but that's what kind of makes it special and what makes every single vintage speak for itself. But with the challenges also come some rewards, because you have a little bit more, shall I say, freedom of expression than some of your European counterparts when making your wine, right?
Yes, that's the new world style wine, where we... I would say in France or in Europe, everything is set up in stone, and it's very difficult to change what's been done before, because that's just the way it is. And you don't have to think too much about, you know, how to improve or to change something, because you cannot really change anything. Here, even more in Virginia, it's still a new wine region, and we're still in the process of learning what does best for us. And it's, again, as a winemaker, you learn every time. There's never a vintage where you are not learning something. So you're always learning. But on top of that, in Virginia, there's much more progress. We've done very, very lot of progress in a few years, but there's still a lot of to go to be able to understand everything from our terroir, from our climate, from how to handle the best varietal for the best soil. So it's still a work in progress, and that's a very exciting part about this place, is we're moving forward very, very, very fast. And I think now we produce a world-class wine. But again, it's still like, you know, we never stop improving what we're doing.
When you look at the similarities or differences, if we shall, Virginia, obviously we're New World, but we're smack in the middle between the West Coast and Europe, if you look at a map. And from a stylistic point of view, you're definitely more in that kind of old world style with winemaking.
Yes, and that's, I always like to describe where we are. We are between California and I'm saying France because that's where I'm from, but we are between California and Europe. And I think the style of wine that we do, that the style, also that style of wine that fit with the terroir and with the level of ripeness that we get with the fruit and everything like that. We are definitely somewhere in between. And also there's a fair influence of foreign winemakers like me, with a bit more of a old world vibes. I will say that's also helped us to be somewhere, a little bit closer to the old world styles than the new world. But it's more about the question of ripeness of the fruit and what we can do with the fruit. So I think our style, if we try to make California wine here, it will not work. So we've got a tendency to look more toward Europe to try to see what we can do here.
And we got to celebrate our own uniqueness and our own diversity too, I believe.
Yes, I'm not trying to try to make a French wine here. I'm trying to make a Virginia wine. And again, I'm obviously very French, but I'm truly Virginia into the way I'm getting into the wine style, because again, I'm trying to make the terroir or unique terroir express itself the best as possible through the wine. So,
Mathieu, we're going to take a quick break, and we come back on the other side of this commercial. I want to talk a little bit more specifically about some of your portfolio and some grapes that are doing really well here in Virginia. Stay with us. You're listening to Crystal Palette's Wine Country.
Enjoy a next-level music experience at the Richmond Jazz Festival, presented by Altria, August 11th through the 14th at beautiful Maymont, featuring performances by Herbie Hancock, The Roots, Esperanza Spalding, Arrested Development, and many more. To purchase your tickets, download our mobile app, available for iOS and Android, or visit jazz@maymont.com. The Richmond Jazz Festival, presented by Altria, sponsored by Virginia Tourism Corporation and the Virginia Association of Broadcasters in cooperation with this station.
And welcome back. Thanks so much for staying with us on Crystal Palette's Wine Country. In studio today, we have Mathieu Fino from King Family Vineyards. He is the winemaker over there since 2007. And Mathieu comes from the Rhone Valley of France. So, Mathieu, you know Rhone varietals very well, in particular Viognier,
yes,
which is the ancestral birthplace of Viognier.
Yeah, but I'm going to be like super French, and I'm just going to say I'm from Hermitage.
Okay.
And in Hermitage, we don't grow Viognier.
Right.
So
right.
for me, it's like what we grow 50 kilometers north, so like 30 miles north. And that's something that I don't even talk about it because it's, no, I'm kidding saying that. But in Crozes-Hermitage and Hermitage, we grow Marsanne and Roussanne.
Sure.
We don't do Viognier.
Right.
Viognier is more Condrieu.
Chateau Grier.
I can say I've been raised with drinking a little bit of Viognier, but.
But you've had some Viognier in your glass from time to time growing up, correct?
Correct.
Okay, wonderful. Since you have that background, and thank you for my geography lesson in the Rhone Valley too, because you always hear Rhone.
Super specific about where I'm
perfect.
Coming from.
It's
I'm
perfect.
Just kidding.
he's got such a sense of humor here, so wonderful. When we were talking about Viognier, though, it's been kind of coined as Virginia's signature grape. We're seeing a lot of diversity, though, with different varietals that are doing well. So I wanted to talk a little bit about you're doing something very unique, and unfortunately, you don't have any in stock right now, but you'll have another bottle in stock, I think, 2017. But your orange Viognier, which is an amber-colored wine.
Yes.
And you want to tell our listeners a little bit about that process, because we're seeing a little bit of we're hearing a lot about orange wine in general, even though it's an ancient old process.
So when we talk about orange wine, I'd like to be very clear. There's no orange in the wine. It's about the color. It's not about...
There's no orange zest in there?
No, we don't make it with orange. It's made with grapes. So it's... The orange wine, for me, the way I describe it, if I describe a rosé, for example, I will say it's a white wine made with red grapes. Mm-hmm. And my orange wine will be a red wine made with white grapes. Mm-hmm. So the difference of process is when you do make a red wine, I'm not going to make an enology class or winemaking class, but when you make red wine, you ferment with the skin. You have the fermentation alcoholic with the skin because the color and the tannins are in the skin. When you do white wine, you usually press right away and you ferment in juice form. So you ferment whites in juice form and red in solid form.
So very little skin contact on the white wine.
No, almost no skin contact on the white wine. But when I do my orange Viognier, I do ferment my Viognier with the skin and with everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's whole berries. So I'm going to extract tannin. I'm going to extract this kind of orange color. From the skin and also a lot of aromatics from the skin. So that's what it is. It's a red wine. Mm-hmm. So you have to think more like a red wine.
The process. Yeah.
And even the drinking, mm-hmm. you're not going to chill it as much as you chill a white wine. I'd rather drinking room temperature.
So you want to drink the orange at room temperature too?
Yes, I mean maybe
like
not
65,
a little bit warmer than a white wine, maybe not as hot as a red wine.
Okay.
But for me, it's that's the perfect wine that you should think of like a red because you're gonna have a little bit of tannin, you're gonna have a little bit of structure into the wine, things that you
don't
get.
That also pulls the acidity down a little bit too, right?
So because I'm thinking more of a red, so I'm gonna get the malolactic fermentation done on the wine to get a little bit more roundness and soften up the tannin too. So.
Well, it definitely is an ancient process that I believe the Greeks started doing it 6,000+ years ago. So in 2017, you're going to have your new vintage out of your orange Viognier, correct?
In December, probably I'm going to be bottling the 2015 vintage, so we'll be able to sell it then.
So head over to King Family and pick that up next year for the orange Viognier.
But it was really, at the beginning, it was really just, I was just having fun. I was just playing with something and very small quantity just to see if I can make something good. It turned out to be good, so I will probably make more.
Can't wait to try a bottle. Save one for me, okay?
I will.
Okay, I look forward to trying that. Speaking of some other grapes that are doing well in Virginia, obviously we're seeing some great success with Bordelais varietals. We're going to get into your Meritage in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to talk briefly about Petit Minsang. Because when you look at, it's from the Jura area of France and Jurançon.
Yes.
And most of the world, it doesn't really grow well or they haven't experimented much with it, but we're doing a lot with it here in Virginia.
Yes.
Being used a lot for dessert wines.
Yes.
We're starting to see some exceptional dry versions. Some like Michael Schaps is producing a fantastic one.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about Virginia that Petit Minsang, why is it, do you think, that Petit Minsang is doing well in Virginia, and have you experimented with a dry version?
Yes. So the reason why it's doing very well, it's because it's a grape that is very easy to grow. The reason why it's very easy to grow, it's because it's got very small berries with loose cluster and like very thick skin. So it's not very susceptible to rot and to other kind of milieus.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes this grape very, very easy, in a good way to grow in Virginia. It's still a Vitis vinifera. And that's the reason why it does very well. What the Petit Minsang does very well with is, it's got a very, high level of acid and very low level of a very low pH. Okay. And that's very often something that we look in Virginia. It's how we can get a good pH and a good acidity because we're into a warm weather climate. And one of our challenges on the white wine is to get a good acidity. So for this part, Pinot Sang is great. But there's still a challenge that's come with it. And it's the fact that it's going to produce a lot of sugar. So if you produce a lot of sugar, it's going to be wine that's going to be very high in alcohol. Mm-hmm. And what's difficult when you do a dry wine, it's to have a good balance between the alcohol level and the acid and the pH. And that's the main challenge of dry Petit Mansang. So most of my Petit Mansang, I am doing it as a dessert wine because I think, you know, Jurançon wines, you've got a good acidity and a good level of sweetness, but it's being balanced by the acidity. So I really like Petit Mansang as a sweet wine. I've been experimenting with dry Petit Mansang. I'm using it mainly as a blending into my Viognier to bring a bit more acid into the Viognier. So in my current vintage of Viognier, we've got 15% of Petit Mansang in it.
Also brings I can see those flavor profiles really melding quite well together too.
Yes, it's not because you don't really feel it in the Viognier after it. It really lifts some of the fruit profile, but it's really helped to give a sharp acid to the Viognier. So that's the way I'm using it. I'm trying to do one with a very long extended aging in barrels. Mm-hmm. It's a dry one with very 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 low pH, so it's very very acidic. But I'm trying to see with an extending edging if I can get something that I found balanced enough that I'm happy to put on the market. So still an experimentation.
And for our listeners out there that may not know a lot about some of these grapes or Petit Mansang, what are the characteristics flavor wise of the Petit Mansang?
I mean, you've got like a lot of pineapple, very tropical when it's done right. But again, it's like very bright acid, very, very crisp wine that could be very interesting when it's done dry. But it's when it's done dry, you need to harvest it early, and when it's harvested too early, your acid is very high. So that's a challenge playing with that.
And I love having Petit Mansang on the Thanksgiving table, holidays. It goes so great with an array of desserts and even
yes.
Some wonderful cheese spreads too.
I mean, like my dessert style Petit Mansang, I will probably get it either with foie gras or with blue cheese.
But I use it like with a sauterne. Similar pair with sauterne.
Yes.
I want to talk briefly, too, about your red wine portfolio. You're doing a lot with Meritage, which
yes.
is a red blend, for those that don't
mm-hmm.
know what that means. And, you know, it's really interesting. I moved to Virginia in 2006, and people were like, okay, the white wine's okay, but the red wine, eh. Red wine is really, we're seeing a renaissance with the red wine in Virginia. You're getting a lot more
yes.
respect, I think, in
mm-hmm.
general. So if you want to talk a little bit about why that perception may have been there for some with red wine and talk a little bit about your Meritage program.
I think it's because, like everything else, everything is coming from the vineyard, and you cannot make good wine if you don't have a good vineyard, and that's something very, very important. And I think for a long time we were still trying to know what works well in Virginia and what grows well and how to grow it and how to manage the vineyard properly to get a good level of ripeness. I think now we know more how to do it. We've got better clone. We know better the rootstock that we're planting. The way we're managing the vineyard is much, much, you know, more professional and more detail oriented. And I think now we're getting to the point where we can ripen some red varietal. And if you want to make a great red wine, you need to have ripe grapes. And now we're able to do that. And that's the reason why, trust me, when I arrived in 2003 and I've tried a bunch of the local wine, I was like, wow, the reds are weak. But again, I think a lot of people knew that that's what we needed to work on. And it's been now like, 13, 14 years that, you know, I've been working to trying to make reds that's got more structure, more balance, and a bit more serious. And I think now we know how to do that.
And doing a lot of blends, too, that helps in an off vintage for a particular varietal, you have the ability to.
You can always balance when something goes well and the other one doesn't perform as well. Then by blending it, you get more complexity, but you can also create a more constant product through the different vintage.
Wonderful. We're going to take a quick short break. I hope you'll stay with us for a few minutes. I always like to do a perfect pairing segment. I hear you like to cook. I read it online that you like to cook.
Yes, I do.
So we're actually going to taste one of Mathieu's wines when we come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about some perfect pairings with some of his fabulous wines. Stay with us.
100 years ago, Virginia's fish and wildlife numbers had plummeted. Then the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries was founded to bring them back. But we couldn't do it alone. License fees of hunters, anglers, boaters, and outdoor enthusiasts paid the bills. Today, our wildlife is here to stay. Thanks to you. Furnished by the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, the Virginia Association of Broadcasters, in association with this station.
Virginia, more than a state, it's the place we call home. From the mountains to Main Street, sand and sea foam. When we travel within Virginia, we all come together, not just doing the things we love, but making them better. The future grows brighter for your family and mine, with every taste, every memory, and adventure we find. To keep loving Virginia, we must all do our part. Virginia.org is a great place to start. This message is furnished by the Virginia Tourism Corporation, this station, and the Virginia Association of Broadcasters.
Welcome back. It's one of my favorite times of the program where we do a little wine tasting, and Matt, too, is pouring some wine for us today. I love that. It's music to my ears. So we're actually doing your Viognier, and we talked a little bit in the last segment that you're doing a little bit of a blend with Petit Minsang in your Viognier, and let me put my nose in here and smell this beauty. So what I really love about Viognier is the floral aromatics that you get from a Viognier.
Yes.
Really nice orange, like orange blossom, a little bit of honeysuckle perhaps.
Yeah, honeysuckle. Yeah, honeysuckle. I like to use honeysuckle to mm-hmm. to describe the nose.
And some almost like tangerine zest as well.
Yeah.
So orange zest going on.
So sometimes I also get a little bit of like watermelon into mm-hmm. into the smell.
So I just took a sip of the wine, and what I wanted to point out, Viognier, for our listeners that may or may not know, Viognier is quite an exotic grape. It has a very exotic nose. And you mentioned in the last segment you're doing a little Petit Minsang to uplift the acidity in the wine.
Yes.
And that's something that can be very challenging from a pairing aspect. And I love to do food and wine pairings, but Viogniers tend to be a little flabby if they don't have enough acidity in them. And you want to talk a little bit about what your goal
is? I do. I do like acid in my wine
mm-hmm.
because seeing acid, especially on white wine and even on reds, is a really way to keep your wine alive and to keep some interesting component to the wine.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, having acidic wine is very, very good, good quality. And that does help with wine pairing,
mm-hmm.
With food pairing, food and wine pairing. So I'm always looking for this acid, and that's the reason why naturally I came to add some Timansank into this wine
mm-hmm.
To get a bit more of this natural acidity from the grapes.
Now, are you also picking a little earlier to try and get that acidity in the vineyard?
Yeah, the vineyard can get also plenty of different aromatic profile. If you you still have a little bit of peach on the nose or at the end of mm-hmm. At the end of the tasting, but it's if you let it get riper, the Viognier might turn a bit more into ripe apricots and peach component. But because I decide to harvest it a bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit more on the floral component on the Viognier.
When you put your nose in this glass, and what vintage are we drinking, Matt?
It's 2014.
2014. So when you put your nose in this glass, you were overwhelmed with this really nice, soft, floral, exotic note, followed by that little bit of a tangerine zest. And I'm also getting some really nice subtle notes of some tropical components, maybe
mm-hmm.
a little papaya going on in there.
Yeah.
A little bit of banana, too, I think.
And that's, you know, that's also part of the fermentation that's mm-hmm. happening with this wine, where I'm fermenting. Part of it is fermenting in stainless steel tank with very low temperature,
mm-hmm.
so that kind of helps develop the tropical component
mm-hmm.
of the wine.
And on the palate, we were talking about the acidity. Sometimes you don't even really, when I do some classes, I always teach people how to assess acidity in a wine. You want to take it in your mouth, you want to hold it, and kind of let it sit on your cheeks for a minute or two. And I do have a video on the website, crystalpalate.com, that you can learn more about that. But feel how the wine drips down your cheeks. And it almost does have this really nice mouth-watering acidity that
mm-hmm.
I don't tend to find in a lot of New World Viogniers. This
Thank
is
you.
A really, really well-made Viognier. But when it comes to a pairing, what would your go-to pairing with this wine be?
I don't know. It's a different question. There's so many dish that you can pick to go with that. I like to go with I'm mainly going to go with fish with Viognier,
mm-hmm.
Because I think it it can go very well with it. The acidity can rebalance some kind of like more fatty fish like mm-hmm. Salmon or something like that. I
mm-hmm.
think that will really
you
help
get that nice mouth feel
yes,
too with this one.
That will get it a bit vibrant, and yeah, again, like playing with a little bit of a more exotic cuisine instead of like traditional French cuisine. Mm-hmm. I think like by having some kind of like, you know, a salty, sweet part of the dish will really help to balance the nice acidity and the very expressive aromatics of the wine.
Some great sweet Chesapeake crab would be delicious with that as
yes,
well.
Yes, yeah, yes,
delicious
yes.
crab meat, and I
yeah,
love doing.
I mean, crabs always goes very well with vinaigrette too.
Yeah. And some people do some curries and some more of the Asian style dishes too.
Yes.
You don't want to go too spicy on that, right?
No, because it will hide too much of the like the heat will hide the subtlety of the wine. So,
right.
But again, like a little bit of spice if you got a little bit of. Curry or even Asian food, that could be a good pairing.
It's ginger too. I've had a few add some ginger mm-hmm. in a recipe can really kind of pull out some of those exotic
yes.
notes in a viognier as well.
But if we go with something too spicy or more spicy, I will probably not choose a viognier. I will probably go with something that's got a bit of residual sugar, something a bit mm-hmm. sweeter like Riesling and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Riesling with Asian food. Absolutely. Spicy Thai is perfect,
yeah.
perfect pairing there. So you're a dad, you have two children, you grew up around the agricultural lifestyle, and we were talking during the commercial break. You like to bring your kids to the vineyard.
Yes.
What do you hope they learn from that experience as they grow?
Oh, I'm just trying to get my kids well educated and with like, you know, being respectful of everything else. So it doesn't really matter what they get or not, but with what I'm trying to teach them, I really don't know. You know, it's that's the life that I'm living, and they're part of my life. So they're surrounding with me with what I'm doing. You know, they every time it's harvest, they like to come and get some clusters directly from the winery, and they are grapes. You know, directly from
dirty.
From the south. So no, again we. There's another thing too, and that's maybe more of my European culture. As we, as a parent, I'm very. We take time to sit for dinner, and that's my European background. Is like we sit down at a table and we all have dinner
night?
Together every night.
That's wonderful.
And we cook and we sit down and we do nothing else than eating, you know, because that's for me the communication in the family goes through. Through this moment, and that's when you learn how to drink wine. That's when you learn how to enjoy food and to eat everything. I mean, I've got, you know, a 5-year-old that can eat more oysters than me if he wants to.
Impressive.
So we're getting them access to a lot of different kind of food, and you know, then they decide what they want to do later on. But
I think that is such a beautiful thing. I think we're so missing that in today's culture here in America. We're so busy. We don't take the time to sit down, to break bread, have a great conversation,
yes.
and bond over a great meal, and, of course, great wine.
That's a part of lifestyle, so that's what I'm trying to do.
It is. What a wonderful role model you are for your children to teach them that at such a young age.
I'm not sure. We'll see at the end how they turn out to be.
Well, there's so much to talk about, but unfortunately, we're already out of time on this program. We need to extend to an hour, I think, to cover some more ground. But, Matthew, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thanks so much for coming in the studio today.
Thank you
Cheers
very much.
To you. And thanks so much for tuning in to Crystal Palette's Wine Country. If you have any questions that you'd like to see answered, please feel free to send me an email at crystal@crystalpalette.com or check me out on Facebook and send me a message. Love to answer your questions on my next program. And you can check Matt out at kingfamilyvineyards.com or better yet, take a short drive to Crozet and swirl, sip, and savor some of Matthew's fabulous wine lineup. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll see you right back here, same time, next weekend. Cheers. Thank you.